You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, I'm Andrew Wiebe, with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr, no Matt Doyle, he's cavorting around San Diego, drinking cocktails, and, I don't know, watching sunsets and enjoying the beauty that is Southern California. Guys, how you doing? How you feeling? Dave, bear sightings? Are you okay? Everything fine there?
I am extremely safe. I'm an animal person now. I'm a nature person. Like I can track things on trees. I can smell it in the air because I went to Yellowstone, which is a very off the beaten path thing to
you
do.
Can
no
smell
one else
scat or like what
in
can
the
you
world.
Smell?
Yeah, I can smell scat. I can investigate scat. I know how close the animal has been, but I've seen it all. I hung out with a bunch of moose, which are pretty cool because they're large. I ran into a lot of bears, multiple bears, which I was a little surprised by. And I've hung out probably illegally close to a lot of bison. Apparently, you're not supposed to be super close to them, but they came close to me. I think they're ETR fans. So it was like, what am I supposed to do about
this? They heard your voice.
Where are you, man?
Me? I'm in the study right now.
Where in Colorado are you?
Is there granola in the oven? Or like, what is, you know, what's happening around the house right now?
Yeah, after this, I'm going to throw the robe on, put my feet up, have a nice cup of tea.
I think there's a really good brewery in Fort Collins, Full 90, I think it's called, which is not a soccer reference, but I do know that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will be there. I'm actually, MLS connection, I am in the study of the former teammate of Stephen Keel.
Really?
No way.
Yeah. Like and Connor Casey, I think.
Are we talking Wake Forest? Are we going all the way back?
No, we're talking like high school ODP.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. I was like, Rapids reserve team? Is this like, we got an Omar Cummings reference again in this show? Can we get that?
Can we find it?
Is the reserve league coming back? I know this is off script, but I got like chills.
Does it get you pumped?
I was like, do I have to wake up at 7 a.m. on a Wednesday, go to Bridgeview? Like, is the game about to start? What's going on?
Between you and Bobby Warshaw and Stephen Keel, like once or twice over the years, we've had some real reserve league all-stars in these podcast
the Resi,
halls.
The Resi games, man, those were bloodbaths.
Can we get Wando's reserve league goal record and throw that on top of the goals he scored?
I mean, we should.
We're in the three? You think we're talking like 100 reserve league goals?
Yeah, he's wasted some goals down there for sure. He's definitely wasted some.
Oh man! That news is still. That was a breaking news story last week. We didn't touch it yet because honestly, I don't know what's going on with it, so I don't even know what to say. But we will get to that at a later date. We have Jesse Marsh on today's show. We've talked about Brendan Aaronson as though it is done to Red Bull Salzburg for a while now, because our guy Tom Bogert, the stash, has been reporting that. Well, it is official now. We will talk to Jesse Marsh. You may have seen that at MLSsoccer.com. We leaked a little bit of that interview early because I spoke to him last week. We got the full thing on today's show. We'll go through midweek action. We'll talk about the big news as it pertains to Supporters Shield and our feelings on that one. But before we talk about sort of the nitty gritty of soccer and everything else, I mean, look, 2020 sucks. We knew that. F this year, now, forever, everywhere in between. It's just been a ringer. My guess is, for those of you listening right now, that there's a lot of overlap between Extra Time's listener base and the Total Soccer Show. I am one of those people that goes back and forth. Total Soccer Show is actually the only soccer podcast that I have, with any regularity at all, listened to over the years. We start today's show by sending all of our love to Daryl Grove. You may know Daryl from the Total Soccer Show. You may know he's been battling cancer for the past few years. Unfortunately, things just aren't going as we'd all hope they would go. And I'd encourage you to go listen to the latest episode of TSS that he put out on Sunday night if you'd like to understand what that means for Daryl. All of our love goes to Daryl. All of our love to his family and friends. All of our love to Taylor Rockwell, his forever co-host and friend. I will say this. You've made so many people out there, myself included, feel like they were a part of your lives, your friendship, Daryl and Taylor. And it is just an incredible thing. It is beautiful. I feel like when I listen to that show that I'm just sort of a fly on the wall with two of my really good buddies that I don't actually see often that we're not besties. Like, we text every once in a while, but I feel like I'm a part of it. I discovered TSS thanks to the World Cup shows that they do, which are incredible, comprehensive, men's and women's World Cup, top to bottom. Really helps you understand some of the teams you may not know. I stuck around because of Daryl and Taylor. They love the game. They clearly love each other. I personally don't think, Extra Time included, that there's a North American soccer podcast that does community as well as they do. And we've been lucky enough to be a small part of that little universe, whether it's sitting down for a meal or drinks or playing pickup at MLS events or just texting from time to time. Daryl and Taylor did stop by the studios. I want to say late February of this year, feels like a lifetime ago. It felt completely normal and awesome and cool. We got to show off our studio to these two guys that do an incredible job there in Virginia. We took them to K-Town for lunch, which was always fun. We talked about soccer, talked about our lives, talked about podcasting. We talked about collaborating more. Always wanted to do that more with them. I checked my text, actually, as I struggled with this news last night. And the last text I have from Darrow is a random compliment that he sent our way after that boycott episode in August. And I really think that sort of sums up how I knew Darrow. He's an intelligent dude, always has time for people, relentlessly friendly, relentlessly uplifting. And like, that can be annoying. Some people like that, you're like, oh my God, like, give me a break here. But that is just not the way it was with Darrow. It just felt authentic and real and true all of the time that he would just say something nice out of the blue. Just out of nowhere, you get a text saying, hey, I thought this was really good. And you would feel great about that for, you know, all the way until now. Perhaps he would also make fun of you a little bit or make fun of himself. I've thought a lot about Daryl. I've thought a lot about life. I've thought a lot about, you know, what we're all here for over the last 15 hours or so. And while Daryl is a natural podcaster, I think that's pretty clear. He makes being a good person, a good friend, look really easy. And that's maybe the best compliment I can give Daryl. So Daryl, may your days be full of joy, free of pain. We're thinking about you, man. I wish we weren't talking about this, but I know that he would probably want us to just get it moving, to move on and talk about soccer. Dave, Kaylin, do you have anything you want to say? Anything that kind of sticks out in your mind as you think about Daryl, about life, about, I don't know, what we're all doing on this rock?
No, I just echo your thoughts and, you know, best go out to him. And I would say that, you know, I've kind of worked in this industry for a little while and we go to a few MLS events a year and there's a few times you see people, you don't really know a lot of people. And he was always a friendly face and him and Taylor were always people that you could speak to and feel comfortable around, which is not that easy. And I would also say that I have a belief in what the soccer community in this country, in Canada, can be, what it should be. And unfortunately, it was it's been a tough moment for Daryl. But he showed what that community is. And I think he believes in it as well, to your point. And we've seen, as Daryl's fought cancer so bravely, how everyone else has been behind him, how they've worked for him, how people have worked with each other, I think, to get over this because Daryl is so known to everyone. And so it's just been an example to see the community that they've helped build, how strong it can be and the things that it can do. And, you know, all of our best go to his family and to Taylor as well, who I think deserves a ton of credit for also standing strong. And Daryl's the one who's fought this, but Taylor's been with him every step of the way and continued to push the show as he can to help them. And so it's been awesome to watch them do that. And it's, you know, sad news, but to your point that we were talking about before, Daryl still here. He still wants to hear people say stupid things about soccer. So we're going to try and help him out here today.
I think he would roll his eyes at this, or he would make a joke, or he'd say, hey, that's, you know, he'd have that like dry sort of devilish grin and he'd avert attention from himself in all ways. But I thought this was a good idea in my DMs from Morgan Tenza, who knows Daryl and Taylor well. I have an idea for an award, and we've been asking for Continental Award ideas. The Daryl Grove American Soccer Podcaster of the Year. And I think that is, you know, maybe I'd swap it to North American. I don't know what I would do, but I think that that is something that we will that we'll think really hard about and try to make happen this year and going forward, because I think that is a really fitting, apt way to honor a man who has had such an impact on our world. So yeah, save some of the tears to the end. I intentionally put my document in front of your faces because if I look at people, I cry. That's just the way.
And if you
I
don't
am,
look at people, you also cry sometimes.
Yeah,
apparently.
That's true. I do a good bit of that. So speaking of things that felt biggish before that, but now feel pretty small. Hey, guess what? The Supporters Shield is apparently not going to be awarded in 2020. And I won't speak for the ISC or the Supporters Shield Federation or Foundation that's making these decisions or the council that's doing that. You can go read their statements and what they've said. They've basically explained that because supporters aren't able to be there because the schedule is wonky this year, it just doesn't feel right. And, you know, look, I respect, of course, their ability to make those decisions. It's their trophy. It's their creation. It's their responsibility. Do what they may with it. I am a little confused. I wish that this wasn't the case, just from a strictly personal sense, as I think about and talk about and care about this league. I think that the Supporters Shield is one of the things that makes Major League Soccer, North American Soccer, our supporters groups so unique and amazing. It's one of the things that has been created strictly through our culture, strictly through people that care about this game. And I know some of the folks that created this thing. I mean, it was supporters coming together and saying, look, we don't have something to honor the best team in the regular season. It is not official. It is a gap that we can fill and that we want to fill. And they went out and got it done. They created this incredible trophy, this incredible piece of silverware. They got it. They paid for the thing. They are the guardians of it. It changes hands between supporters groups. It is of the supporters, for the supporters, in conjunction with, in covenant with, I believe, the players and what it takes to win it, which is sustained excellence over the course of an entire season. I know how much it means to people, and not just the supporters, of course, what means a tremendous amount. It is their little piece of history that they get to hold on to and pass to each other. But also the players. I remember being on the field at Red Bull Arena when the Red Bulls won it. And I remember, you know, I think it might not have been able to get to the stadium on that day because it was kind of a race. It might have gone two different ways. I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened.
I think it was in Toronto for Atlanta. Yeah, are you talking about?
Yeah, I think it's that year.
Because 2015, it was there.
And I remember Packy and those guys carting it about. Or yeah. No, that was 2013?
2015, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In the Atlanta Red Bulls year, I believe it was like an Iron Man shield or like a Captain America shield that Luis Robles was carting around, and they were treating as if it was the trophy itself, and the fans were going back and forth. The South Ward was just, you know, elated, and this was this incredible race that they had come out on top of it and meant so much. So to know that it's not going to be awarded this year, or at least that's the case now. You know, things can change. It's confusing to me. It's a little disappointing to me. I wish it was going to happen. But I guess I understand in some ways the bizarreness of 2020. I don't think it takes away from, let's say, Toronto FC if they win it or whoever might make a run here. But I do think that it's pretty clear that the players care about it. You saw that from Greg Vanney. I mean, Alejandro Bedoya had some pretty incredible comments about this. So I don't know. I spent all of yesterday in DMs and talking to supporters and saying, what do you think? Why is this happening? Why did this happen? And I think there's an element of confusion out there, and I share that. And I guess I don't know what else to say other than it'll be back next year. It'll go on tour, and it will forever be a part of our soccer landscape. I just think that having it in 2020 would still be appropriate. It doesn't need an asterisk. We all understand that this is a bizarre FUBAR year. Like, it's unrecognizable to the norm. I get that. But the players, some fans, are still out there playing games, competing, doing what ultimately earned you the shield, which is earning points and being at the top of your craft over the course of a whole season, no matter how bizarre it is. So I've been rambling right there. So somebody please cut me off and say something more coherent. So I'm still recovering, I guess, from the open.
Gus, what do you got, man?
I just, me and Andrew argued for 25 minutes before we came on the show about an asterisk. So we disagree about that, which I think we'll have more time to talk about later on, because I don't think that's specifically a conversation about the Supporters Shield. That was just us talking about sports and soccer and how it can be represented coming out in 2020 for the future.
Yep.
I just think it's pretty apt for what 2020 has been. It's confusing. It's sad. It's unfortunate. That's the year we're kind of living in, as we've already stated throughout the beginning of this show. There seems to be that level of confusion of how it went about, which is unfortunate, but the reality, or at least one of the things that is the reality of the Supporters Shield, and one of the things I like, is it was the supporters' decision, and you want it to be as democratic as possible, but that's what that trophy represents. And the supporters, to what Weeby was saying, this wasn't something that existed when MLS started, and the supporters have built this, and they've done a great job of it, and I think it's grown, and I look forward to seeing it awarded again.
Yeah.
That was much more coherent and well said. So I now feel shame in my rambling. Kaylin, what do you like from a player's perspective? Because we're talking about as people who will never win this thing. It was never even like, we just talk about it, you know?
Yeah. Same, yeah. But
yeah, fair. Well,
yeah. I'm interested in, I mean, I've just seen so much of the conversation around it. And I, a couple years ago, I went to Toronto for the final, and we actually kind of looked up where the supporter shield was made. And so we actually went to the factory to see where it was built, and kind of like see some of the process and the meaning behind it and how it's kind of passed along, which I thought was really cool. I think the guys were from the Red Patch Boys, or I'm trying to remember. But anyways, I'll have to rewatch the movement. But anyway, but I think it's interesting to see the reaction from the players, because I think some of the players and coaches were clearly upset. And I'm not sure that necessarily would have been to the case, or at least to the level that it is now, as it was in the past. And I just look back on my time playing, and I mean, it was really only about MLS Cup and Open Cup, and Open Cup even has grown in stature exponentially during that time. I mean, I would play for the Fire, so we took it very seriously, and we won. We're fortunate to win it as well. But I think the supporter shield has grown massively over the last 5 years, especially since I've been covering the league. Where in the past it was like, I know every MLS Cup champion and most of the Open Cup, and then it's like, I'm not sure. I remember like Columbus and some of the best teams, but it was more as like, those are the teams that are going to be the best teams for MLS Cup, or when they win both, you're like, yeah, of course, they were the best team all year. But now I think that's really shifted to being, this is being a trophy that is like really massive now, as far as respect amongst the players and the way the guys talk about it. It's been a weird year. I mean, not having the players and not having the fans in the stadium for the most part, I think it's awful for guys. I was in Philly yesterday, and I went to go interview Mark McKenzie and Warren Cravall, and just like, sitting in the stadium with the cutouts of fans, it's not what anybody wants. I know they're doing some limited people beginning to come to games, but I just was looking at it and saying, well, I mean, the cool part to me about the supporter shield is that it's something that's shared amongst the players and the fans. And so there's that moment where the fans take it, right? And then they hand it over the divide to the players. And then the players celebrate wildly. And then they hand it back to the fans. And so for me, I'm like, well, is it just the supporters then? Or does it not belong to the players anymore? Because, I mean, they've put quite a lot into it, and they don't decide the scheduling. They don't decide any of the things that have happened in 2020. So I think that sort of reciprocity seems to be missing in maybe this decision. I don't understand it fully. And I think that's maybe why some of the players have responded in the way that we've seen them respond.
Yeah, I think that's it. And look, logistics play a part. Part of this is that like LAFC's supporters would have delivered this thing to whoever it is that would have won it. And there would have been an exchange. And that's part of what this thing represents. And look, in COVID times, we all understand that's not really possible. It's not the same as it was before. It's not as easy to just jump on a plane last second and be like, oh, guess we're going here. We're putting in a box. We're rolling this way. I think you said it well in the sense, Kaylin, of just sort of being like, I'm not sure exactly what's happening here. And that's the way I feel as well. So I don't want to speak to it. I just want to kind of, hope for the best for the shield in the future. And I think it will be right back where it was in 2021, where it has been, which is growing in stature and super important to teams that say, look, as Bob Bradley made it a point, like being the best throughout the regular season should matter. It should be an honor. We want to be dominant in that way. And this is what we're awarded. Now, look, somebody still will, whoever wins will be top of the playoffs. They will get, unless they're a Canadian team, which is the way it has always been, a CCL spot, and they'll get that place in the playoffs and seeding and everything else. But they won't have that piece of hardware. And as someone who thinks a lot about stories and what, sort of the physical means to the mental and how it all comes together, I think the shield and the story, as you said, of passing it back and forth and of that covenant between players and supporters was really what made it so special. So
I was just going to say, definitely hit us up, because we got a show coming up on Thursday. It's your trophy. These are your teams. What do you guys think about this? Email us, tweet at us, and then we can definitely get into it more with your thoughts.
Yep. All right, look, before we get to Jesse Marsh, let's talk about the news, because it's real now. Brendan Aaronson, he is going to Red Bull Salzburg in January. They may be in the Champions League knockout round. They may be in the Europa League. They may be and none of the above, depending on how things go for them in their Champions League group stage, which is, by the way, super stacked. So they start with Lokomotiv Moscow, I want to say, and then they have Atletico Madrid, and then what? It's Bayern Munich as well. So I think so. Yeah. So Jesse Marsh is not, you know, it was Liverpool last year. He's not like just dipping a toe in European waters. He's diving headfirst, polar bear plunge style into the freezing cold and just trying to figure it out. But they'll have Brendan Aaronson in January, and it's $6 million, reportedly. Jeff Carlisle was the first with that one. Of course, Tom Bogert was confirming that, had a little bit more on that as well. $6 million and rising to $9 million potentially. Bogert says those are easily accomplishable kind of bonuses there, and then 10 to 20% sell on depending on the circumstance. That's huge, man. That's the second biggest homegrown deal in the history of this league behind only Alphonso Davies. That's incredible. That just it blows my mind. I'm going to be honest here. I did not think Brendan Aaronson was going to get that amount of money, no matter how much I like Brendan Aaronson. But it's a great sign for the union, for Aaronson and what he means to Salzburg, and any homegrown player in this league that thinks, you know what, I dream of playing in Europe, and this is the path that I'm taking that I think can get me there.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I think you look at the signing and you say, for a team like Salzburg, they want to win their league, they want to compete in Champions Leagues, and then they want to sell players at a high level to the bigger leagues in Europe. If they're investing this money in Aaronson, that means they think the flip on is worth it, which means you're talking $9 million. That means they think he's going to play at a top five club or in the Premier League, where the numbers right now, players are being bought for, is $15 million and above, because otherwise they don't make this investment. So that's what it means for him. It also means that he's going to get opportunities, which we expected because Jesse Marsh is there and we know him from his background, but it's good to be in short of that for both Brendan and for US soccer fans, that he's going to get opportunities to play there. And I think the other thing is, you talked about that pathway. Brendan Aaronson wasn't a youth national team guy. He didn't play in a youth World Cup. He just got called in for the Olympic qualifying, if that were to happen. So one of the things that I like about the MLS structure now is there's more opportunity to more players to get to a high level. This isn't Project 40 where there's three good players who are going to get an opportunity to play as teenagers in MLS. Brendan Aaronson hasn't had the opportunity to go to Indiana University on a scholarship, which is one of the best soccer programs in the country. Got an opportunity to play USL soccer before he went and decided, I think I can play pro. And Philly had a pathway to get him there comfortably. And now he's gotten to lead his team. He may get to lead them to a trophy this year for the first time ever. And he said in his statement in leaving, I had two dreams. One was to play for the Union at this stadium where I went as a kid with my family. And the other was to play in Europe. And so he's got the opportunity to do both those things, which is super cool. And it's just another opportunity to say, like, this structure can work.
Yeah.
One, we want to see more teams do it. And two, it's great to see the teams that invest in it, there be payoff, because then they'll continue to put into it.
I mean, the structure works for Salzburg as well. I mean, this is what they've done, is to buy players like this and then move them on. And clubs all over Europe are, I mean, when you're producing players and flipping them to the likes of Holland, it's like you're going to have eyes on you for next young players to come through. It's a perfect age for Aaronson to go as well. And when you have a coach like Jesse Marsh, who knows Jim Curtin quite well as former teammates with the Fire, it's really a dream spot. Ultimately, whether he moves on, I think will depend on his production there at that next level. And can he continue to, you know, get goals, get assists, and be involved, in their successful runs in Champions League play. But like, credit to Jim Curtin as well, I think we should mention, and credit to the Philadelphia Union, because like you said, Goss, I don't think Aaronson was like an obvious pick, right? He's not like a no-brainer where you just see this kid come out through the academy and you're like, oh man, like I can't even, like, just get out the way. You know, it's like they really gave him some trust. They gave him some time. They let him make mistakes on the field. They brought him through the pathway. And this is real money. Like, they made real money. To think in just a couple of years that you can take, I don't know, a flyer, but like, you really give a kid an opportunity and suddenly you're now flipping him for $6-9 million. I mean, just think about the way, what that tells the rest of MLS and other teams that should probably be investing in the way that we're seeing teams like Philadelphia Union doing. But you're always asking about that other side, right? Especially in an economic climate like it is now. But this is one of the best ways to make money as a club right now. So I think, And then, by the way, he's been pretty darn productive for your team as well. So we're seeing young players now in Red Bull, whether it's Caden coming through and playing as well. And
first name basis now, huh?
I mean, yeah, we got a connection. And then what was the 16-year-old scores for LAFC?
Christian Torres, yeah.
So, I mean, playing young players is, you guys talk about it all the time. We talk about it all this time on the show, but it has to be profitable at the end of the day. And it has to be profitable on the field as far as points and results, which it has been for Philly. But now it's also profitable in the long term in a big way.
You got to give credit to Richie Graham, YSC, for the work that they've done, because it's not just Brendan Aaronson. This is a big group of guys coming through. And you got to give credit again to the organization for giving the trust to Aaronson, but also giving the leeway to Jim Curtin to say, hey, we are entering an era in which we think we are going to be best set up to actually win things, to be successful. And in that era, we're saying it's okay for you to play an 18-year-old who has had questions about final product as your number 10. Go do it. Go let him have the opportunity. It paid off massively for the Union. It's not just, as we said, the $6 to $9 million and the reputation, which is huge for them, and the future of what they're doing, because they have invested so much money and time and expertise in YSC, but also in that tract, and also in the 50 plus games that he'll play, and maybe the MLS Cup that he will win, and the history that Brendan Aaronson will make, and the trust that you'll have from players and their families. Like, there is so much to be gained, and I'm of the opinion that not every MLS team has to be in this model. You don't have to do that. Maybe they're only going to be like 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 or 13 or whatever, like 15, half the league be Phillies, and the other half be the guys that are buying the homegrowns from those teams that don't break through. You know, there are a lot of different models to be had in this league, and it's not universal. You don't have to do it all the same way. I just want to say the final thing, and I've beat this home. MLS, the clubs, the coaches, the players, we all have to recognize that we need to be dream makers. As Brendan Aaronson said, his dream was to play for the Union. Make that dream come true. Do everything you can to help that kid make that dream come true. But then also recognize and respect that that kid might have another dream as well, which is to play in Europe. And recognize and respect that that dream can also benefit you as well in so many ways. And it doesn't have to be selfish. You should do it partially altruistically. But the more we make dreams come true, the better this league is going to be. And I think we all want to see a future in which players from the United States in our academies and in Canada are coming through, making big impacts, and becoming Champions League players. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing. So let's talk to Jesse Marsh. I interviewed him last week. It's a long conversation. The first part about Aaronson, but so much more. Champions League, his evolution, the American player, the perception of the American player in Europe. Give that a listen. We'll be back. All right, let's talk to Jesse Marsh in Austria, in Salzburg, doing his thing. It's always great to talk to you, Jesse. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. How you doing, man? How's everything?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It's been some long days here, like everywhere around the world. But we reached the Champions League group phase, which is a big goal for us here in the beginning of the year. And so things here are good. My family's good, and we're enjoying some time together.
All you can ask for. And many other Americans in the Champions League group stage. We'll get to that in just a second, but I want to start with the news. Take us through the process, scouting and signing Brendan Aaronson. What role did you play? What stands out to you in getting this guy into your team?
Well, since I've been here in Salzburg, I've talked a lot with the club about a lot of the young Americans and the guys that I think have had some potential. To be fair, Brendan was really young when I was in MLS, so I didn't speak about him as much. I didn't know him as much. And the club came to me first and said, hey, we've found this guy, Aaronson. What are your thoughts on him? And I said, yeah, I knew him a little bit from when we played against him maybe 2 or 3 years ago in preseason down in Florida, because he scored a goal on us. And we played 3 45-minute halves, and I think the game wound up being like 6-4. But the third 45 was a lot of the academy players from Red Bull and a lot of the academy players from Philadelphia. And I remember he scored a good goal against us. And then I started watching video, and I was really impressed with what I saw. And this dates back probably 10, 12 months ago. So the club kept following him, kept cutting videos from his games, kept coming to me and saying, listen, we think this kid has a lot of potential. He loves to play the way we think. And so then it just kind of gathered momentum from there. And it was really fun watching him in the MLS's back tournament and seeing him continue to get better. And And, you know, even when I've spoken with Jim Curtin over the past months, you know, he just says the kid just keeps getting better. He has such a strong mentality. He's so driven to figure out how to grow every day. So we're really excited to have him here. I think he'll be a really good fit. The conversations I've had with Brendan have been really good. He's really mature for a 19-year-old young man. And that's something that I think is always important. When you talk to these young players and when you get the feel after a 10-15 minute conversation, like you're talking to a grown man, that's always, I think, such a good indicator for the potential of the personality and the player.
We know there's a certain style that the clubs within the organization, and that's bigger than just, of course, Salzburg, want to play. When you see Brendan Aaronson over the last 10 months, year after the scouts came to you, what are the things in your scouting report under, you know, what are his attributes that you think really translate and are really at a high level? What are the things that you're saying as a coach? Hey, these are places where we can help you. We can make you better.
Yeah, so the first term we use here when we look for players to scout is rule breakers. So we look for the guys that are eager to run, eager to sprint, eager to chase and to press. And they're the things that maybe you know, a lot of clubs don't really look for, but things that we think fit our idea of intensity and aggressively playing. And so that part with Brendan is easy to see, right? He can run all day, the ground he covers. He, you know, when he goes to press guys, it's not just because the coach told him that he should be pressing. It's that he wants to win the ball. He hunts the ball. He hunts players. He finds ways to always make an effect on a play defensively. And then when he wins balls, he wants to go to goal. He's brave in the way he plays to goal. He's brave in the way he goes into challenges. He's brave in the way he goes 1v1 situations, how he plays in tight spaces. So, you know, when you're saying rule breakers in terms of the way that we think and the way that football is often played with possession and with passes and completed passes, he was a rule breaker from the first day that I watched him. You know, and then, you know, once you start to see how much he can run, how much he attacks with and without the ball, how much he wants to get into the box, how he wants to make final plays. And certainly in the last few months, I think his ability to make final plays has gotten better and better. So, yeah, I think that all those qualities will fit seamlessly here in what we do in Salzburg.
So much of what I read and heard from you and all the reports when you first got to Salzburg were about player development, not just sort of the on the field side, the personal development side. And I think when you talk about, okay, when I talk to Brendan, these are the vibes I get off. And when I see him on the field, these are the things I get. Those have to combine together and they have to do it in a place that he'll be uncomfortable to start. What would a development plan for a guy like Brendan Aaronson look like for you? Have you already worked on something like that? I mean, when you make a signing like this, I assume that's in place. You have an idea of what you want to do and how you want to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, we started talking about learning German. So he's been taking German lessons. Then, you know, he asked a lot of really good questions. I always think that's important. When young players ask the right questions, then it lets you know that they understand what you're trying to communicate with them. He asked about, you know, the formations we play, the how we use the number 10 position when we play in a 4-2-2-2, when we play in a diamond, you know, what we ask of players in those positions. He asked to see our games as much as possible. So all these things let you know, like, this kid is serious. Like, he has the mentality to grow, to get better. He wants to do well. There's a term in German called Will, and it means a desire. And the sport director and the scouting team, they kept saying that he has this Will, that he wants to learn, he wants to get better. And it was easy to see that in the way he plays, but also in the discussions that we've had with him. So, you know, I've also challenged him to stay focused on what he's doing there with Philadelphia, because, you know, we want him to finish the year the right way. Certainly the relationship I have with Jim Curtin means that the last thing I'd want to do is put Jim's team in any kind of jeopardy by distracting one of their best players. But it hasn't taken much at all. Brendan has been so focused. He's been so disciplined. He's given everything to the group there in Philadelphia. He plays every game, and you can see how much heart he pours into every game. I mean, I'm sure it's hard for Philadelphia fans to think about losing him next year. But I also think it'll be a lot of fun for them to watch him play in Champions League and in Europa League and in some big matches here in Europe. So, yeah, we think he has a big future, not just here, but beyond.
So this is maybe it's too specific, maybe it's not. You said the 10 and he's asking about that. And maybe the answer to this question, these two questions, is the same. I don't know. How do you see Aaronson fitting into your squad in January? And what's his best position long term in your mind?
Yeah, well, the way we think about football is that, you know, if they understand our philosophy and the habits that we're trying to create, that in theory, they should be able to play almost any position on the field. Mm. And certainly one of the best examples of that was Tyler Adams. We used Tyler Adams in New York in almost every single position on the pitch. So I think he Brendan is naturally a number 10 type player. But even in the last weeks, you've seen when Philadelphia's played 4-2-3-1, that they've used him out wide. They've used him as the central 10. They used him as the six. So I think he can play, you know, I think he can play when we play with two tens. I think he can play in that position. Sometimes we play with a number 10 underneath a striker or underneath two strikers. I certainly feel like he can play that way. He's played the eight sometimes in a diamond with Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I think he can do that really well. And I think he's capable of playing a six, especially if he has more a defensive-minded six playing next to him and he's got a little bit more freedom to move around with and without the ball. So I think the combination of his natural abilities, his intelligence, and again, his desire to be a big part of the game, his desire to have an effect in the game means that if you put him anywhere in the midfield, he's going to do well.
So we talk about development, and I think about this from the terms of like somebody listening to this podcast who maybe is a coach here or who maybe wants to be a part of this process. What piece of advice would you give to young coaches when it comes to grooming both young professionals, but young players and developing them? What would it be that you would say, this is it? This is sort of your North Star. This is what you should focus on and think about.
Well, the first part is, as a coach, you have to have a plan, right? You have to have a way of playing. And you can define that however you want, what you do with the ball, what you do without the ball, what you do with formations. But certainly I've developed a way of playing, right? And it certainly fits within the Red Bull system and it's integrated into what we do here. But that's the first step, is the style of play allows the players to understand what the roles are and how to fit within the game in the way that you would like them to. But once you develop that plan and that tactical plan and the way of training and what you're trying to achieve and from a strategical perspective, the part about investing in people, right? And often what I tell people is, don't become a coach because you love the game. That's great. But do it because you want to be a leader of men. Do it because you want to, or women, or whatever it is, that do it because you want to help a group understand how to grow, how to get better, how to challenge themselves, how to challenge each other. And then you're able to provide them the platform to express themselves in football, right? And so that's what I try to do, is get to know each individual. And that's part of the fun. You know, I mean, there's whether you talk about the trip I took around the world with my family, or whether you talk about the languages that I've learned or the experiences that I've had, it's been so much more than just what football means to me. It's about people. It's about cultures. It's about how things fit together and getting to know people. And the more that I've invested in that, the more I've been able to reward the players and the teams that I work with, and then create this kind of environment where everybody wants to achieve and wants to give. So that's a short mumbo jumbo philosophical way of talking about how to be a football trainer, but that's what I believe. It's of course it's about football. It's about tactics. It's about training, but it's so much more about relationships that you have with people.
So I think about Brendan Aaronson as one of many who we'll see go and make this jump. And I hope it'll be many, many more. But MLS says it wants to be a selling league, and you have to sell to be a selling league. Put on your consultant hat, put on your European manager hat, put on your former MLS head coach hat. How does MLS create and maximize, let's say, present and future value in players? Like, should we just be selling more players? Should we be for maybe it means we sell for less and we have sell-on value. Should we just try to get a mass over there to create a market as an American player? As an American, as a European head coach now, how do we do this? How does MLS become more of a selling league?
Well, I think, first of all, that the more examples we have of young Americans that come to Europe and have success, then it starts to change a little bit the perception of what the American player is. The perception in Europe mostly is that American players are willing to run, they're willing to fight, they have good mentalities, but technically they're not very gifted and tactically they're not very aware and their experiences aren't very big. But we're seeing that change, right? We're seeing more and more of these players develop themselves. Even Frank Lampard, when I spoke to him in preseason a year ago now, when I was talking to him about having Christian Pulisic, he was kind of like, yeah, you know, he's got a lot to learn. We'll see how he does. And I said to him, listen, he was at Dortmund and they had a very high level of tactical thinking and playing, and he was very successful. And he was considered in Germany one of the best young players in Germany. And that's in a group of players with Timo Werner, Kai Havertz at the time, and a lot of really Joshua Kimmich, these kinds of players. And Pulisic was considered one of the best young players. And so, and that was not just because he was talented, it was because he understood the tactics, he understood how to fit into the game, and he was developing a real astute way of thinking about how to play. So I could right away see that Frank Lampard's idea of Christian Pulisic was shaped a lot by the fact that he was American, yeah, and not that he was actually, that his education in football came a lot from what was happening in Germany. Since then, I think Lampard's learned, right, that actually Pulisic's a lot better than he gave him credit for. Christian had a fight for that, which is the American quality, but he's a damn good player. The same with Gio Reyna, the same with Tyler Adams, the same with Weston McKennie. So all of these players are now starting to show, that are born and raised in America, that not only are they big talents, but that they're also more refined football players than many think. And so Brendan Aaronson will show that when he comes here. And I think more and more examples will help change the perception of what the American player is. And the more that we can do that, then it, you know, I would love to see MLS actually start to then maybe go away and then develop to be such a great league where, is selling the right thing? Is it not? What are the options for different young men? Obviously, in the moment, the more young players we can get into Champions League type environments, into top leagues, that's good for us as a footballing nation. But let's not forget about what MLS means to football in our country, what the league has done for so many people. Certainly, I'm an MLS born and raised and bred example. So, you know, my heart still is heavy with MLS and the progress that we're making back home.
Do you think there's any truth in that perception that Europeans might have, the scouting departments might have, the head coaches might have, that tactically, technically, we're not there? Or is that simply just a perception?
What's really interesting is that in European football, there are these preconceived notions and maybe biases and whatever, and then there has to be players that break those reputations. Okay. In the end, for me, maybe it's because I'm an outsider, I try more to look at things for face value, for what they are and what they could potentially be. So that's, you know, I've said a lot that my reason for coming here in Europe is ambition is a part of it, but it's more to see if my idea of life, my idea of football, my idea of what this business is, if it can thrive in the most competitive environments. And I think it makes me a little bit different. You know, it does. The fact that I'm really open with players, that I have strong relationships that are more just about more than just coach player, that they're more about getting to know people deeper. And I hope that will continue to reward me and continue to reward the players and teams that I work with.
I think that's interesting to think about in the sense of perception being one thing, but maybe if you throw that out, it becomes individuals, it becomes relationships, it becomes more than just sort of this big blanket statement that you're pushing out there. Now, I'll throw a blanket statement out there. This is the most exciting year to be an American soccer fan when it comes to European soccer. 11 players in the Champions League. You're in the Champions League. Let's, on the player side, when you look around, you think of the McKennies and the Sergiño Dests and the Pulisics and, of course, the Gio Reynas and so many more now. Are you buzzing too? Like, deep down, are you like, oh my God, this feels incredible?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited that people back home are pumped about it. Certainly, I love, you know, I know Claudio. I've never met Gio. I've only watched him from afar. I've texted and spoken with Claudio about his son. And so, you know, I'm clearly a Gio Reyna fan. I'm clearly a Tyler Adams fan. Speaking of Gio, I text a lot with Erling Haaland, and he tells me he's taking care of Gio and he's looking out for him. And, yeah, I mean, but Erling's that kind of guy. He's awesome. you know, Weston McKennie, a lot of these guys. Sergio Dest, I said hello to him when we played Ajax in preseason. So still, when you see different young Americans over here, you know the challenges that they have to deal with. It's not easy. A lot of days, these young men feel like they're a little bit on their own. They have to grow up really fast. They're in a very competitive environment. A lot of times they have to learn new languages. They have to adapt to new cultures. And they have to deal with the biases against them. But they do it in such a good way. And they have so much inner belief. And that's what I love to see about these young American players. And you know, when the champion song comes on before the game, they don't stand there and think, oh no, it's just Champions League. What a big moment. They're like, I've dreamed of this my whole life. Yeah. And now it's time for me to show how good I am. And that is the American mentality.
What's this mean for the national team in your mind? This is such a crazy time with everything involved, but you know, maybe November we get to see some of these guys together. Maybe we do get to see World Cup qualifying. I'm sure we will see a World Cup as things even out. What does it mean for the national team program?
It has to help, right? I mean, when you have these young players that are having big experiences, but the national team experience is something different of its own. So everything from traveling from Europe and back and forth and the demands of the FIFA breaks, it's not easy. I've witnessed that for years. They have to understand what playing in CONCACAF is like. A lot of them have played in the youth tournaments, so they have a little bit of a taste. But yeah, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time for it to come together. But the more that we have young players over here that are establishing themselves with big clubs and in big leagues, of course, that's going to pay dividends with the national team.
Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid, Lokomotiv Moscow. You're going to be hearing that Champions League anthem ahead of matches against those teams. And of course, you did it last year. And we all remember the game against Liverpool that had everybody jumping up and down. What is possible for this Red Bull Salzburg team? What excites you most about this season? What gets you going?
Well, I've talked for the last 6 months about getting to Champions League. And then once we get to Champions League, getting out of the group phase, like I've said, that's the next step for this club. That has to be our new ambition. Then you draw in a group like this and, and you have to be careful what you wish for. But this is great. Like, and you know, one of the awesome things is we've watched the last 2 years, we've watched the draw together. And both years when we draw these incredible teams into our group, the guys, they were screaming for us to be in Group A with Atletico and Bayern Munich. And as a coach, I was sitting there and I was like, I'm not sure. I don't know. But you like, it's so great to have these young players that are fearless, that want to compete against the best. Bayern Munich for me is easy, the best team in the world right now. I said that about Liverpool last year. So what an incredible challenge, a team that I don't think has a lot of weaknesses. Atletico is an intense team, really well coached, some incredible players. They've made some big moves in this summer window. That will be a big challenge. And our first game is at home against Moscow. And it's a very smart team, a team with a ton of experience. You know, this is what you get a lot in Champions League is we're so young, we're so dynamic, we're so fearless, but we play a lot against teams that are champions in their leagues with players who've played in World Cups that have been in Champions League year after year. And so it's a great juxtaposition, this ambitious, young, powerful group of players against the really experienced, savvy teams from other countries that have so much underneath them. So, you know, again, it'll be a challenge for us. We have to grow up fast in this tournament and show that we've gotten better. It'll be a big challenge, but certainly our goal is to get out of the group phase.
How have you developed, Jesse, as a coach in Europe, the most, in your opinion? What are the places that you really think that you've grown or focused on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. What's really important when you come over here it's easy to say, understand the culture of the club and the fans, but this winds up being massively important. You have to adapt to the league, you have to adapt to the culture, you have to adapt to the club, you have to adapt to the fans. And you do that by your work every day. You learn that by learning the language. You learn that by your interaction with the people. And you know, so that winds up being a massive part of it. Certainly, I believe that my ability to have strong relationships has always been a strength of mine, but that's continued to grow. And then, yeah, I do believe that tactically and now looking at games, analyzing opponents in the middle of games, understanding how to make little changes so that you give your best team strategically chances to win. That part, I think I've grown a lot too. So I played with Rafael Vicky when we were in Chivas, and he said to me, you know, a trainer in Europe has to do three things really well. He has to sell himself to the club, he has to sell himself to the fans, and he has to sell himself to the players. Mm. Now, I don't think of it that way as being a salesman, but I understand the fact that you have to wear a lot of hats. You have to be good at almost everything. You can't just be good at one thing. And that's what I try to do. I've tried to embody what I think an appropriate, a strong leader for what a strong leader in clubs in Europe can be. So that's fun for me. That's a big part of the challenge, but that's a big part of the fun.
What are the Red Bulls supporters? What are they going to be sold on for Gerhard Struber? What's he about? What's he like as a person? He seems fascinating, just personally, let alone the soccer side.
So, you know, I know him fairly well, but not great. We were opponents against each other last year in the league. He worked here at Liefering in our cooperation club, like our second team. Mm-hmm. He's deeply rooted in Red Bull, and he's a strong believer in our system and in the way we play. And he's also a big motivator. He's a strong personality. He's going to come. He's going to bring a lot of emotion and a lot of motivation and inspiration to what we're doing in New York. And certainly then he'll be very, very focused on the discipline of the way we think about football, which I think will be good. I think he'll be the right fit. I think we need a guy like that. And I'm hopeful that he can, you know, really get the team on track again.
I have to ask you about him. It's the big news for the club. Caden Clark, 17 years old, floppy hair coming out, hitting the volley. I have to imagine within the organization that this is a name that you at least have a little light bulb going off. Did you see the goal? What is your impressions of Caden Clark?
Yeah, I was watching the game. We've followed him and we've seen him. And this is not the first time I've heard this name.
Oh, yeah. Right? I expected as much.
So we're aware of who he is. I think he's in a really good place right now because even the time that he's gotten with Red Bull 2 has given him a chance to kind of learn our system and grow within the way we think and play football. And in the end, yeah, let's see how it goes. I've read the reports as well about Leipzig, and listen, he's 17. Yeah. Let's give him a chance to get his feet underneath him. What a great start. Like, always so fun to see young players achieve with the New York Red Bulls. And now let's give him a chance to grow into that team, into that group a little bit. And the more that he does well and shows, you know, how good of a player he is, then we can maybe in a year start to think about what the next options are. But let's let the kid enjoy his football. Let's let the kid enjoy his development there in New York.
We'll slow the hype train down there. I'll ask you a nuts and bolts question about Caden Clark, because I basically on this show advocated for MLS to eliminate homegrown territories. I get why they're there, but I don't think that they best serve players or clubs really in the quest, the ultimate quest, which is to develop as many high-level players as possible. If you could make one change to the academy system, the rules, whatever it might be, what would it be? And what do you think about homegrown territories in a Major League Soccer?
Well, in general, each club has to come up with its own strategy. I've said for years, you know, a lot of teams have thrown a lot of money into their development or into their academies. And I've asked myself why they're wasting their money. They don't really care. They don't really hire the right kind of coaches. They don't have a system that feeds into the way the first team plays, and there's no continuity. And maybe even what they used to say was their catchment doesn't really provide them with the talent pool to provide to the first team. So why spend $5, $10 million a year on the academy and the academy development when it's never going to benefit what you're doing with the first team? Whereas in other places, such as New York, we've seen what Philly's done. Obviously, Dallas has had a good academy over the years. Places like that seem to make sense because they care about the academy. They invest in it, not just with money, but people, time, resources, football, everything. And so then it makes more sense that if we find young 14, 15, 16-year-old players around the country that are a little bit more possession-oriented, then maybe they go to Dallas or maybe they go to LAFC. But then if you see players that are aggressive and want to run and want to play against the ball, then obviously let's go to New York, you know? So it's then I think we give the right kids, young men, we put them in the right places and give them a real opportunity to succeed and get better. Now, as a parent, I watch that and I think, okay, is that best? Are we ready for that? Still with the university system, still with the youth football system that we have in America, a lot of the psychologists call it professionalism of sports for young men and women at certain ages. How does that fit into the American culture? Okay, obviously we want to create, when you just think of it from a footballing perspective, we want to create the best environment for all these young men. But I think we also got to balance it out with what's right for every family, every young man, every young woman, and put them in positions where they can ultimately succeed in life, not just in football.
Yeah, I'd like to trust those families to make the choice. I think, you know, 15 years from now, maybe, hopefully, my kid will be making choices like that too. But last question for you. I know you got a family to get back to. We're talking soccer projects only. You cannot follow the New York Red Bulls, but in the next 3 to 5 years, you can follow one team in this league. Just for soccer reasons, what club would it be and why?
I mean, it's the Red Bulls. How can I not
you
say
can't
the
choose
Red Bulls?
The Red Bulls. What do you mean? We know, I know you're going to follow. I know you're going to do that. But
there's
I know
no
you're going to do that.
There's no chance I'm picking anyone else. I'm picking the New York Red Bulls.
Oh, come on. You can't give me. How about just a team squad. A team you like to watch play right now?
I mean, I like Philly. I like, but it's a lot because they're doing things in this sort of Red Bull way with Ernst Tanner. I think Jim Curtin has done an amazing job this year, right? And to see him grow as a person and as a coach over the years, you know, I'm really proud of Jim and really happy for him. And certainly, I think even getting a player from Philly, you know, even though maybe it doesn't fit with the Philly-New York rivalry and everything else, but I, you know, Richie Graham and what they've done at YSC, how they've built that club. It's great to see them being finally rewarded for a lot of the money and energy and time that they've put into creating the kind of club under a vision that they think they want to embody. So, I mean, that's for me also, they're doing things similar to what we've done in New York. So I guess that's my cheated way of answering the New York Red Bulls.
Can't pull this man away from the Red Bulls, right? Look, best of luck, Jesse, in the Champions League. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Always a friend of the show. I appreciate you, man.
Awesome. Good to talk to you. And yeah, let's do it again.
All right. Big thanks to Jesse Marsh for taking the time to chat with us. Seems like he thinks Brendan Aaronson's got a big future, not just at the club Salzburg, but beyond as well. Interesting to hear him talk about the American player and what he's gone through, too. If you have any thoughts, let us know. 401-206-0MLS@MLSsoccer.com. As we were sort of transitioning around in this show, we got an email. It is a very important email. The topic of that email is Major League Soccer announces steps to combat racism and increase Black representation. That is but the tip of the iceberg, I would say. So I will run through this. Basically, MLS announced a series of initiatives to combat racism, advocate for social justice, and increase representation in the sport. All of this in conjunction with the Black Players for Change, who are certainly making change. So there's going to be a diversity committee, and this is all at MLSsoccer.com. We don't have time to walk you through it all right now, but we will have some BPC folks on very soon, perhaps even on Thursday, to explain what it means from their perspective. There's going to be civic engagement to help address issues of public concern among marginalized communities. You've got Soccer and Upward Mobility Initiative to develop career paths and talent from underrepresented groups. The grassroots is there. Suppliers for events and games, looking for minority suppliers as well, and creating partnerships there, but also $1 million to the organization from Major League Soccer for Black Players for Change to basically get their present and their future started. Kaylin, you've, of course, done a lot of work around this, sort of exploring what the folks within the organization think, why it matters, why we should care, and your podcast, The Movement, has I hope been listened to by everybody who listens to this show, and they've passed it on to the people that they know. We're just reacting to a press release right now. We haven't seen actually how this will sort of manifest itself, but it feels like a good positive step.
Yeah, no, excellent news. And I mean, there's been a bunch of press releases, but what I've been most happy to see is them followed up on. I was actually just in Chester yesterday. I drove out yesterday morning to spend some time with Warren Craval and Mark McKenzie, and popped out to the training center, and it was turned. Subaru Park is just opened as a voting center, as a voting service center, and it was a 3-day pop-up event that you know, the club had to really work to get open, and it was amazing. It was incredible to see our democracy taking place within a stadium, and that was a press release. But I was like, I gotta go. I saw Mark McKenzie put out the tweet to be like, spread the word. And I just shot the guys a text to say like, hey, can I come check this out? How would you feel about this? And, yeah, it was really cool to see. And just when I look at like what the BPC have done, you know, to organize, but then it was like, all right, well, it's not just the statements. It's not just the demonstrations. It's not just the t-shirts. It's, you know, partnering with More Than a Vote. It's the way that they've been able to get the message out and actually, I mean, play a big part in helping to open these stadiums up for the election coming up. And I mean, it's just amazing to see. And so to see the league really sort of, I guess this is more like formalizing a plan, and it's holistic. It's, you know, goes from vendors to they're opening mini pitches. Red Bull's just opened one, which was awesome, with Black Players for Change. So, it's incredible to see. I don't know how these guys are having the time to be able to do all this, and be, you know, excellent on the field, but, it's awesome. And I love that the league is supporting.
We'll get somebody on Thursday, because I'd love to hear from BPC's perspective what they think about this, how it came to be, and what the future is of what they're working on. Well, they've got some resources to do it.
Yes. Awesome. I like that. Also, I was just going to say, we're working on another episode. So those interviews we did yesterday will help to tell part of that story around it. But ours is more focused just on the like looking towards the election.
Now, and by the way, if you're interested in what Mark McKenzie thinks about voting or the effort to get Subaru Park set up, we had a great interview with him last week on Extra Time. Charlie and I had just one of those chats that you just remember for a long time.
Dude, I listened to that the whole ride out to Chester. Yeah, it was awesome.
And here you were promoting the movement, but you couldn't even drop that just little nugget in there. Just like, you know.
But it's one of those things we're about to talk about, I think, how much younger players have gotten in MLS and have the chance to succeed. And what's incredible to watch is this youngest players, the way they speak up and the way that they're confidently leading. And I give credit to a lot of the veterans for leading the way and creating a space to be like, this is acceptable. Because I think there was a time, and not I think, we're currently in one, where people say you can't be an athlete and an activist. You can't be an athlete and speak your mind. You have to focus on one thing. To Kalen's point, look at the work all these players are doing, and then look at the success they're having on the field. Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Obobese has been as outspoken as anyone, and he's killing it currently and just beat LAFC last night. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Christian Torres.
Yeah, true. You're right, Christian Torres. Right.
First Academy goal for LAFC. Give him some props. 16 years old. Speaking of the youth leading us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I called his U15 game last year, by the way.
The youth part is special too, but I think even if you look at veteran players too, like Alejandro Bedoya stepped out in a big way in the past, and Michael Bradley, like there's been a range of players that have spoken up on topics that they care about as well in MLS. And so,
So I would say like, Mark McKenzie was always going to think what he thought. I think Alejandro Bedoya creates a leadership style where it's like, be yourself. Right. And then we get to see these young players be themselves. And Reggie Cannon's another example.
Sure.
And it's amazing the people that we have in this league. The young men that are a part of this league that are becoming a part of it. And now I feel confident in both the leadership from the veterans and the young players who are going to follow it up. This isn't going to be a 3-month thing and then Justin Morrow retires and this goes away, right? This is going to be the reality in MLS going forward. And it's awesome.
It is awesome. Speaking of young players, 22 under 22 comes out this week, Wednesday and Thursday. We will tear that list apart on Thursday. I am very sure of that. Who'd you vote for? Who's your number one?
I voted Brendan Aaronson number one.
Really?
I think this was one of the toughest years for number one. Not that I don't think these players stand out. I just didn't think anyone had a season like an Almirón had, a season like Diego Rossi had, where it was like, you could debate 1 through 5, but you can't debate one.
Or it was like Alfonso Davies was just so otherworldly. That
although I think Tyler was too behind Alfonso Davies, right?
Yeah, but come on, it was Alfonso. He was 17. Yeah. He had led the Gold Cup in scoring. He was he was balling out.
Yeah. I didn't feel that way this year. I think Paxton Pomykal being hurt was a big part of that. I think he has the ability to be one, but obviously hasn't played. So I went with Brendan Aaronson.
Yeah, I thought Doyle wasn't on the show, but his spirit has come through in you. I voted Brian Rodriguez. I thought it was honestly pretty obvious that he was the number one. I know that the final product in terms of goals hasn't always been there, but he to me is the best young player in this league and will have the biggest future, I think. But yeah, look, you proved
wrong. You were the person in the group chat who said, I don't vote on potential anymore. I vote on what they've done.
He has like 10 assists. He's incredible. Okay, he's playing for Uruguay. That's not potential. That's production. We're going to argue about this. We're going to argue about this on Thursday. We don't have time here. Orlando is in the playoffs. Okay. We have to touch this because they've never done it before. Speaking of great young players, Daryl Dike is one of the great young players in this league. What does it mean? What should it mean to Orlando, Kalen, that finally they've reached the promised land? And they not just reached the promised land, but look like they have many years of success ahead of them because of the foundation being laid by Oscar Pareja and that front office.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is I think they would have been, if you would have started the year and said, hey, they might be able to squeak in at the bottom of the playoff table, like that would be, oh man, that would be amazing. And I'm pretty sure most experts said that wasn't going to happen. not to go down that rabbit hole.
I'm not going to go back and look at my predictions. Those don't count anymore. That doesn't matter. Too much has happened. Throw it away.
Anything pre-March is from a different year.
No, but I mean, we saw them kind of announce themselves at the MLS is Back tournament in Orlando. And then you're saying, well, this definitely looks like something that they can replicate in the regular season and beyond. And so they have a real chance in the playoffs to make a deep run and potentially win it all. I really don't think that is beyond the pale for them, especially how we've seen them be pretty good in knockout play as well. And I think in a one-off situation, when you look at like the leadership that they have, the experience, and then just the style of play, they're able to play a bunch of different ways where they can really dominate the ball and keep possession. They also can make it hard on teams. They're a tough team to play against. They've got good goalkeeping. Like they're pretty sound throughout, and then they've got a couple of really big difference makers that can hurt you. And the one difference actually that I would say has emerged from that, since that MLS is Back tournament, has been Dike. And that was kind of maybe the question of, well, imagine if they went out and signed an international number 9 and they added that to the puzzle. And then you're like, oh, actually, they got a 20-year-old who's just, you know, hold up play is great, but also combines, gets on the end of things and scoring goals. So, I think for Orlando fans, it is pretty exciting. Not just in the sense of like, hey, it's not what it was, but like, damn, look what it is now.
And what it can be too.
Yeah.
We will have the conversation. I think I had it in the show, but we've spent too much time elsewhere. Daryl Dike or Ayaya Kanola, who would you take in like a 5-10 year projection? I'm sure they will both be part of 22 under 22, so we'll talk about both of them then. Here is how Orlando fans feel. This is sent to us. Quote, I am just in tears. A lot of us on the Reddit thread OC Lions over the years, I feel like we've just been hitting our heads against the wall. What was missing? What wasn't working? Why does this keep happening? Countless times going to games, knowing we would lose, but still showing up, singing, chanting. We have what? 6 or 8 podcasts to talk about this team? The fan base is here. The fan base fell apart. After what, 3 or 4 years of having nothing to show for it, some people even left to go to Miami. But this fan base was in a lot of pain. We saw coaches rotating it out. We saw players not work within the system of those new coaches. But we finally got it right. Our front office finally got it right. The players, even after draws, are reportedly talking about the next game and how to improve. That's like the bar that was pretty low for them before. There is so much hunger to win these games. We're wounded at the moment. We have injuries. We have no return in sight for some, but we are here. We're in the postseason. Congratulations to Orlando City. And congratulations to the Eastern Conference for being demonstrably better than the Western Conference. They have 4 teams in. The Crew clinched as well with a big win this weekend against NYCFC. The West has 0 because it's just a bloodbath of, at some point, it feels like mediocrity. Do you have a take on that? A quick take, Dave, before we hit the mailbag? Because I know we want to get there.
Yeah, you watch the games and the energy, the speed of play in the Eastern Conference is better than the Western Conference. It's not that no one's clinched in the West because it's so deep. It's right now no one can pull themselves up and stand apart. And I think we'd all say Seattle is up there and Portland probably
but not at the level that
Toronto, even Columbus with the injuries that they've had, Philly's ability to continue to churn them out, in Orlando as well. Yeah, 100% the soccer right now is more impressive and stronger in the Eastern Conference. And they're playing each other because there's not travel like we've seen in past years. And so you're getting to see some really good matchups. Orlando won this or tied against Red Bulls to get in. And it was a great performance. Red Bulls played well in this game. And yet they couldn't get a win because that's how good Orlando has been. I think you saw that across the board last night.
All right, let's hit the mailbag here. You know how to get us, 401-206-0MLS-extra-mlssoccer.com. We're talking Continental Awards as we have been for a while now. Trying to figure out exactly what our 6 to 8 are going to be for this year and maybe for every year going forward. We will release the official awards show around November 16th, and we'll, of course, ask you for nominees. that's going to be required this year. You got to nominate potential winners, and then we'll have a fan vote as well. You'll be the tiebreaker if it is 3-3 with the five of us and the fan vote. So David and Skokie starts us off, as he has so often. You're a legend, David. What's he got to say?
He just wants a interested in a leveled up best 11. This would be for players who made the biggest improvement year over year, or guys who have added a new weapon to their game. Jordan Morris would certainly be on a team like that, perhaps Busio as well. I think we talked about a position change. I think their most improved player is already an award.
Comeback player of the year is, that's usually about injuries, though. It often gets confused. I think maybe most improved could be that. We could call it the Devontae Graham most improved player of the year.
I feel like Chris Mueller would have a good case for that.
Yeah, Chris Mueller would. Andres says stop. Nobody else is. Yeah. If Doyle was here, he'd make a UConn reference and we'd all groan.
I know it's a KU player. I just don't care.
Okay, fine. All right. That's a good one. I like that one. What else we got?
Christopher Hull, similar idea, but different belated suggestion for Continental Tire Awards. Former USL Player of the Year Award. This award would go to the most valuable player who was signed to a USL contract and played in USL the year prior and now is lighting it up on the field for MLS. There are many pathways for players. Now, wait for this. This is what Chris wants to get to. Kickstart the discussion with some honorable mentions and homerism. Take a look at the success Nashville has had with their USL signings compared to other expansion teams. Last night, Nashville went into Houston and got a 3-1 win. This was last week, starting three and playing five players who played a game in USL last year.
Danny Musovski is making a late run at this one.
Danny Musovski is scoring goals for LAFC, and it is wild. But yeah. Yes, he would be.
Who else might be in this one? I'm trying to think. Who spent the majority
Ethan
of their...
Wasn't Ethan Zubak your boy? I mean, come on.
Hey, yeah, for sure. More goals and less minutes than Chicharito, baby. Sorry.
Yeah. Does it count if you're on a two team?
I think it should. I think if you spent the vast majority, like you couldn't have played more than like 3 to 5 games, I would say, at MLS level. Okay. But you were like a USL championship starter. Brian Reynolds would have a chance. Right? You're right. Not enough time.
We're just trying to shoehorn him into every
conversation. Not enough time probably this year, but that's a good one. Hit us up if you have nominees on that one, and we will try to put together a list of those guys for the next show.
And then we have a nice long list here from our friend Rafael Del Filippo, who says he's a faithful listener from Italy and writing a few silly proposals for Continental Awards. One, the Taylor Twellman Epic Rant of the Year Award to be chosen from among player, coaches, or GM interviews. The Kenneth Vermeer immediately disappeared in foreign signing of the year.
No, forgotten signing. But it probably might also be a foreign signing too, you would think.
That feels like a very necessary MLS topic.
Yeah, like the TAM award that just was clearly not TAM worthy.
I'm
not saying anything about Kenneth Vermeer. We also have the Daniel Vega mistake prone award that was nominated a couple weeks back, and Kenneth Vermeer would probably be in the running for that one as well.
I still think we should just call it the Hamdi Salili.
Hamdi Salili? Rice and Bowley. Rice and Bowley could be a shout there too.
Rice and Bowley could be a good one. He's got the Rudy Camacho most ridiculous red card of the year award.
Won by Rudy Camacho.
The worst card.
Did anybody see Rudy Camacho kick LGP like in the butt on the final play of the game for no discernible reason with Montreal up 2-1 and try to blow the game? Like, all it would have taken is a referee being like, you know what? That was real stupid. Here's a PK. Anyway, I digress.
And then he has the flip side, which is the Clint Dempsey most worth it red card. Would also be a good idea, remembering the time Deuce ripped up the ref's notebook to protest his decision for this one. I count, for instance, second yellows for taking the shirt off after a game-winning goal late in the game, or things like denying clear goal-scoring opportunities and stop a time to protect a draw would be the most worth it red cards. He also has in here the Fernando Adi most regressed player of the year and the Chicharito most useless striker of the year.
Lord, and I think he's got
now another topic that Chicharito would win, which is the most vital miss of the year award, or the worst miss, which Chicharito may have done against Vancouver last night.
Yeah, that was a tough one. That was tough to watch. Look, we got to get out of here. Producer Anders says that we are at an hour and 13 minutes, and that generally means he starts yelling at us to close the show. Big thanks to Jesse Marsh for joining us. Thanks to you guys for being here. There's a big note here for you. On Tuesday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, it is the anniversary of the 1996 MLS Cup. That game is going to be airing on YouTube and Facebook at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. It's part of the 25th season celebration here at Major League Soccer. Boy, this 25th season has not gone the way we might have thought, but it is still fun to go back and reminisce and to think about what it was. I will recommend this just for the pregame and halftime, which is incredible. Let's just say Alexi Lawless in full grunge and Pele announcing the goal of the year. That's all you need to know. With that, we're out of here. Big thanks to you guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you on Thursday.